7, contact tower 128.15.
Caution, caution. Manual, fuel, manual, fuel.
I'm John Golia.
I'm Greg Fife.
And I'm Todd Curtis.
And we are the Flight Safety Detectives.
Between us, we have over a century of aviation accident investigation and safety experience to draw on as we discuss issues that affect all of us.
So we are qualified to share our perspectives on accidents and incidents and what can be learned from them for the future.
We're proud to say that we have two sponsors that really relate to the topic of aviation safety: the Professional Aviation Maintenance Association, or PAMA, and Avemco Insurance. Later on in the show, we'll tell you how you can get a 5% discount on your insurance just for listening to the show.
We don't just dissect the official reports. In every episode, we identify safety issues and take the mystery out of accident investigations.
So maybe pilots and their planes can have safer flights ahead. Well, hello, Todd. How are you today?
Well, not bad at all.
Yep. Glad to hear it. Glad to hear it. Well, we're going to talk about that little 737 that crashed into the ocean today. As I think everybody should know, that a couple of days ago we had a 27-year-old 737-400 crash in flight, come down from 35,000 feet after a bit of a wild ride, and ended up in the ocean, killing all on board. And it was supposed to be a ferry flight, five people on board. Be interesting to see who the five were, if they were all company employees. It's Pakistani registered. The airplane was previously owned by Aeroflot, the Russian airline, and 2 years ago it came out of Russia and has been flying under Pakistani registration. That raises some concern in itself, because they weren't able to get Boeing parts for 10 years. So who was maintaining the airplane? Who transferred the airplane out? There's a lot of questions that lead one to question the origins of the airplane and the reason for the flights. Well, that's the gist of that airplane. We're following it. We'll continue to report on it. It's interesting. What was done with the maintenance? Did they who certified it to come back on Western registration after coming out of Russia and living under sanctions for 10 years? It's just an ocean of questions in the middle of that.
And it was a 737-400, an out-of-production Boeing 737, and one model, that is in mostly cargo service around the world. I'm not aware of any U.S. operator that's operating this model in a passenger configuration. So in addition to the sanctions, getting repairs done on this aircraft to keep it up to, let's say, U.S. or Western European standards might be problematic under the best of circumstances.
Yeah, there's just so many unanswered questions here. And with the flight data and voice recorder not likely to be recovered, because it's in an area of pretty deep water.
It's likely that unless there's a compelling reason by the Pakistani government or perhaps by the U.S. government, no operation will be executed to recover the cockpit and data recorder, and also recover the rest of the aircraft, because, frankly, there are only a few countries out there that have the means to do deep water recovery of aircraft. And of course, the U.S. has had lots of experience doing that, and a lot of the wreckage from the Air France crash in the South Atlantic from, I believe, 2009 was successfully executed. But this is one where it's not a passenger aircraft, it's a cargo aircraft. It's not a current production aircraft, so although there might be an interest by the manufacturer, Boeing, would not be the same level of interest if it were, let's say, a 737 MAX. So we're probably not going to see much more in this story, which is why we're going to move to a more recent, rather closer to home event, which is something that made national news because in part it happened just off the coast of Manhattan. There was a Kodiak float plane that was flying from the Hamptons on the tip of Long Island to Lower Manhattan, and it had a some sort of hard landing, and looks like a float on the aircraft collapsed. And we have the fortune of having inside the aircraft video, which if you're watching the video version of this, you'll see something from ABC News that showed something that was shot by one of the passengers, showed the aircraft coming in for what appeared to be a normal landing, normal touchdown, and shortly after that touchdown, the aircraft lurched and started to lean over to one side. But the forces were such where he didn't have any of the passengers who were visible in the video, at least, hitting their heads in the seat in front of them or tumbling out of their seats. They were all belted in. Everything was all good with them. And at the end of the video, you could hear in the background the pilot saying, "Get on your PFE," which I believe means the personal flotation equipment. And one or more passengers says something like, "Where's the PFE?" The only thing I would question about this is, was there a sufficient pre-flight briefing with this aircraft, and were the passengers listening?
Yes, and I doubt if this airplane has a G meter on it, so they'll have to deduce it by the brake on the struts. Fortunately, the float stayed attached to the airplane. You can see it in the pictures, so the airplane didn't sink.
So the
So.
passengers were not in any imminent danger of sinking, and this was happening, of course, in July, on July 5th, which is a rather warm day compared to the day that Sully put down the A320 in the Hudson River on the other side of Manhattan. So even if they had to jump into the water, hypothermia would not have been an issue, in my opinion. And the aircraft is a Kodiak 100, designed to be a float plane, operated by Acadian seaplanes. Now, this is interesting because the company that apparently sold the tickets for this flight was Blade, which is a company that operates out of New York and I believe also in Europe. And they offer helicopter flights, especially to and from the airports in New York and to and from Manhattan. And they also offer on their website flights on the seaplane or a seaplane like this from their base over in the Hamptons, which is at the tip of Long Island, to New York. And I'm pulling up another video here for the people on the video side of this. It shows the flight path of the seaplane as it came down the East River, made a turn around the Brooklyn Navy Yard, then went up the river and landed near 23rd Street. So, looking at the entire flight plan of this aircraft, there was nothing out of the ordinary. It seemed to be a nice, stable flight. Nothing indicated that there was a problem with this aircraft prior to landing. Now, the other part of this, which we're finding a little hard to find information. This is a company that is does not allow their data or the ADS-B data to be used by some commercial flight tracking sites. So when I went to my favorite place, Flight Radar 24, there was no information there. I went to another site that I use, ADS-B Exchange, which typically has everything. Just point of fact, although you can request that your information about your aircraft not be put on commercial sites like Flight Radar 24, ADS-B is open to anyone with the right receivers. And the FAA has to be able to see the signal. So there is no way that even someone who likes to have privacy can turn their signal off and operate the aircraft legally, at least in a commercial sense. And by the way, I did take a look at some of the ticket prices going from the tip of Long Island to New York on this particular flight. And if I were to buy a ticket next week for that same leg, it would be about $1,100, $1,200 one way, which might seem a little high. But our guess, our speculation is that they have a customer base that values time over money, especially if you're driving 100 or so miles from the tip of Long Island back into Manhattan. And John, you told me offline earlier that the travel on a good day from the middle of Long Island to New York can be kind of nerve-wracking.
Yeah, I lived in the middle, and coming into to the city any time except 2 o'clock in the morning was always a chore. just that's it's a big city, it's a lot of people, a lot of traffic.
And
So,
Long Island, as the name implies, is not a short island. Long Island is on the order of 100 miles. Even under the best of circumstances, it's a bit of a haul if you're commuting to and from. So beyond what has been said about this on the news, we looked at the FAA incident site, and it was rated as an accident with substantial damage, and the aircraft had one pilot and six passengers. This is a fairly small plane that has a pilot and co-pilot seat as well as 10 passenger seats, at least the standard model. I don't know if this particular model had 10 passenger seats, but from the video from inside the aircraft looked to have at least five or six passengers inside, which is consistent with what the FAA information said. Beyond that, it's going to be a bit speculative as to what caused this, whether it was something with the force of the landing, or whether there was something else going on.
I had heard somebody else say the airplane was fairly new.
It was built in 2025, according to the records we could find.
Right, so and it was built as a float plane, so probably the NTSB, if they do an investigation, will be interested in those struts to find out just how they broke and was there any pre-existing problems with the metallurgy. Or whatever they're made out of. I'm not even sure what they're made out of. But thankfully, the float stayed attached to the airplane and it kept the airplane from submerging, which is always a problem. The helicopters, we just, not too many years ago, killed a whole bunch of people in the East River with a helicopter that crashed and went upside down with everybody in it. A bunch of people drowned. And in that case too, some of the issues were the personal flotation devices, the PFDs, and the briefing. So the survival factors people from the NTSB will be very interested in those comments about what are the PFDs that the some passenger made. Some comment made by some passenger about that. There's probably some lessons to learn from this operating lessons. I mean, it looked like a good flight when looking at the data. It came in from Hamptons, came into New York City, went down the river, past the Williamsburg Bridge, made a U-turn, went back up the river. And the video showing the river didn't show the river being any kind of, agitated state, no big waves, no swells from anything. So it looked relatively calm. So either it was slammed down, and it doesn't really look like it was slammed down on the video, but it is hard to tell. But it
And
doesn't look like it was slammed
like I
down.
said before, there was nothing in the passenger reactions, even when there was a airplane started to tilt over. Nothing was knocking them out of their seats. I didn't see people in distress. They seemed to be sitting in their seats and not bracing themselves especially hard for this landing. So it's going to be interesting to see what structural aspects were important here. Now, another thing I like to talk about New York in particular, two things. First thing being, this is a kind of unusual passenger activity. You don't see float planes in major cities much in the United States. Float planes are used primarily in places where you have a low level of traffic and a unique situation. For example, this same air company, according to their website, has flights out of southern Florida over to the Bahamas, which makes sense. There is a market there for that. And New York, of course, has a market for several reasons. One, it's geography. Manhattan is an island. Getting into and out of that city, that part of New York City, is kind of difficult. You also have a huge concentration of wealth, both in New York City proper and in the suburbs. So there is a market of people who will pay $1,000 one way for a float plane trip in New York. Going forward, the talk, well, we've talked about it before, advanced air mobility, the ability to have innovative aircraft flying in and around New York to satisfy short-term transportation needs. Float planes are just the beginning. There might be from companies like Joby, quadcopters or six-bladed helicopters or vertical takeoff and landing aircraft that in future years might be used to transport this same clientele. How long before it happens in New York? or in any other part of the country remains to be seen. It will very likely be happening elsewhere before it happens here in the United States. And as is the case with many New York events, this event is an accident. No one was injured. Everyone was able to walk away. But it got national attention because it's a New York City event. We have a concentration of media there. So to the credit of the New York media, they're giving us through ABC, their local affiliate, some very good data from inside the cockpit, excuse me, inside the cabin.
Hello, aviation enthusiasts, safety professionals, and curious minds. Welcome to Flight Safety Detectives. We are thrilled that you dropped by. Here, we dive deep into the world of aviation safety. From incident investigations and technical analysis to lessons learned and what they mean for safer skies. As a member of our channel, you get exclusive member-only perks, first access to new episodes, live stream discussions, and Q&A sessions. We are a community of fellow safety detectives who love aviation as much as you do. If you're passionate about aviation or just curious about how things work, we'd love to have you on board. Hit join, ring the bell to be notified, and jump into the discussions in the comments. Strap in, because together we're going to explore aviation safety like never before.
Second New York story I'd like to talk about briefly happened the day before, on July 4th, 2026. There was a NetJets jet taking off from Westchester County Airport, just north of New York City, was flying past New York, about 15,800 feet reportedly, just south of Staten Island, when the pilot reported something to the effect to air traffic control. And this is from a website that reposted some of the air traffic control video. And the pilot apparently said something like, about 3 minutes ago at 15,800 feet, a large silver object flew down the right side of the aircraft, just missed us. And it's kind of hard to say as we're moving this way. I'm not sure what that means. I'm thinking that this was a head-on sort of thing. But it moved pretty quick past us, just down the right window. Okay, first off, anything that close flying to another aircraft is not supposed to happen. I immediately, when I heard this report, I went to various sites, including Flight Radar 24 and ADS-B Exchange, and replayed what was in the air around that aircraft at that time, and there were no other aircraft with an ADS-B signal. This was at 15,800 feet. Had this been a traditional drone legally flying at that altitude, it would have had to have had communication with air traffic control, an ADS-B output, so it could be tracked by radar and tracked by the FAA. This was not the case. This is something where I'm looking for more information. In fact, just this morning, about an hour or two ago, I put in a Freedom of Information Act request asking for very, very specific information. The ADS-B data from the aircraft, I have it from commercial sources, but the official FAA source has much more highly refined data. Any near mid-air collision report that was generated by this, any UAS, that is unmanned aircraft system report that's generated by this, and any UAP report, unidentified anomalous phenomena report, that was generated by this. And I say UAP as a possibility because one of the things the pilot said was it went down the right side fast, like a large silver vessel or something. I don't know what it was. Not aircraft size, smaller. That's definitely bigger than a drone. So, in your extensive aviation experience, John, do you know of any aircraft smaller than a traditional aircraft, let's say smaller than the aircraft That was that. In fact, let me get you the type of aircraft that was involved here. This is a Bombardier Global 6500 aircraft,
That's
which
not a
is,
small airplane.
that's not a small airplane. So smaller than an aircraft, let's assume, I'm assuming here, speculation, the pilot meant something smaller than the aircraft the pilot was flying, but bigger than a drone. So we're talking about something like what I fly, a Cessna 172, which would have problems flying at 15,800. And I definitely have problems if I were that close to another aircraft, my certificate would be yanked. But the way they described it, this is daytime, by the way, this was about 12:09 in the afternoon in New York City, pretty decent visibility at that time. And they described it once again as a large silver object. Didn't mention wings, didn't mention rotors, didn't mention anything on a traditional aircraft. Granted, it was a very quick look at this, but it begs the question, what in the world could possibly be flying above New York at 15,800 on a day where there are a lot of air show activity going on because of the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence? There was a lot of unusual air traffic going on in New York. This, or anything looking like that, was not in any of the military or civilian displays I'm aware of on July 4th.
No, I don't think of anything. And that's a tough altitude for a drone to be flying. But with the holiday going around, it could have been a balloon. I can tell you, I've been in more than one cockpit where we've had near misses with birds. And I've ducked more than once sitting on the jump seat because I thought for sure it was going to come right through the windshield. But you only get to see it at the very last minute. And I mean, it's not even the last minute, it's the last two seconds or so. And it's either going to hit or it's going to go miss you. And if it misses you, you have no indication. You just keep on going. It's all a blur because you're going, you're going fast. The bird goes by, boom, it's gone. A split second. So, I at 15,000 feet, I don't think we'd have a drone. I think it's either a bird or a balloon.
And I don't fly aircraft of that size and speed at those altitudes. So I don't know if it's common to mistake, let's say, a large white seagull for something silver. But then again, if it's coming at you real fast, and seagulls, the wingspan of a seagull can be bigger than a lot of commercial off-the-shelf drones. And
Oh, easily.
the person didn't
Easily.
say it was like 6 feet or 8 feet wide. He just said wider, bigger than a drone. Well, what kind of drone is this person used to? MQ-9 Reaper drone in the military, that's bigger than a Cessna and a little bit smaller than their aircraft. But again, I was not aware of any kind of official sanctioned aircraft flying in that way. Now, this is another thing I'd like to mention, something I came across before. Cases where pilots saw something unusual but did not report it to air traffic control. This pilot did, I think, the right thing. Something was unusual. And 3 minutes later, apparently, when things had calmed down and maybe they weren't busy with air traffic control, they made a pilot report. Very simple pilot report, stated what they saw. The FAA will take it and either run with it and make a report or not make a report. But fortunately, because of the, let's just say, the people out there who enjoy listening to air traffic control reports or transmissions and repost them online, this is a positive thing. I might not have ever known about this until months later when I might have stumbled across it in a standard report like a near mid-air collision database report or the drone sightings near airports database, which updates only every 3 months. Now, we just entered the third quarter of 2026. They typically update that database 1 month after the quarter ends. Now, the third quarter is going to end in, let me get my dates right here, in September 30th. So sometime in late October, maybe there would have been a report on this. Instead of waiting 4 months, I found out about it a day after it happened, and I already have a Freedom of Information Act request out there. So if there's any there, I hope to get some feedback within 4 to 6 months. Well, this brings us to our second to last word. And, the second to last word is an internal conversation I had in my head. It's like, gee, Tad, the audience might think, You're not telling us anything really important. Yes, somebody got killed in a cargo crash, but that was like on the other side of the world for most of us. There are no passengers on board. It's an old aircraft. Why should we care? And this other stuff, the float plane, yeah, a bunch of potentially wealthy people from Long Island were in a crash that they walked away from, and this is not something that flies a lot of passengers around the world, so what's the big deal? And this, silver thing past the airplane, so what? Here's the deal. Events that seem to be unimportant to the usual daily thing we talk about is actually important to aviation because it's the little things, the obscure things. For example, a fatal accident that may not be heavily investigated by the authorities for various reasons. A minor accident that caused no injuries, but it called into question the relationship between an operator of an aircraft that's working with another company. And why is the information for this operator somewhat hidden from view? We found it because we find those things all the time. But the average passenger buying a ticket on this particular airline was actually buying a ticket for an aircraft operated by someone else. Are there any issues there? And the last one, anytime you see somebody having something fly by them at 16,000 feet almost, whether it's a bird, a plane, Superman, or a balloon, it's important to get to the bottom of it. It's a very long last second to last word. It's because this is an unusual show.
Yes. And for the last word, I'll just keep reminding everybody, if you're going to go flying, please do a good job of planning your flight. We still have accidents where pre-planning was not up to the standards that it should have been. When you get out to your airplane, please do a good pre-flight. Touch your airplane, move your flight controls if you can reach them. Get used to your airplane, understand what it feels like. What the, you know, if you just wiggle your flight controls, someday you might find one that's got a bearing that failed on the previous flight. You never know. You got to just make sure that you pay attention to those little details. And after you get in the air, please, please put the head on a swivel. A lot of students flying out there. Just got to know what's around you. And please, please fly safely.
Let me talk to the folks who have joined the Flight Safety Detectives, our members. We thank you very much for doing so, and we're hoping that you are enjoying your membership and the benefits that come with that, including getting early access to new episodes and other goodies to be determined later. And if you're interested in becoming a member, you'll see a graphic on the screen with an arrow pointing to the join button on the YouTube channel. Join. Do what is necessary to become a member at whatever level you'd like and enjoy those benefits. And if you have questions, whether or not you're a member or not, write to us at flightsafetydetectives@gmail.com. And we're not leaving out sponsors. We love sponsors. We can always use more, and we hope that you can use our content to attract our audience to your product or service. Contact us at fsdsponsors@gmail.com. We'll have a conversation.
Thank you so much for listening to the show. We really value all of our listeners and subscribers. Our podcast gets ranked by you. So if you like this, give us 5 stars inside your podcast platform.
We want to keep the conversation going with you. So we'd love for you to engage with us on our social media channels. We're on Instagram, X, Facebook, LinkedIn, and of course, YouTube.
You can email the show at flightsafetydetectives@gmail.com. By the way, if you're watching this on YouTube, we're working on growing this channel, and it really helps if you all comment. So please do that. We read them all.
And be sure to subscribe.
For decades, Avemco Insurance Company has been an advocate for pilot safety by promoting and sponsoring continuous pilot training and education. One of their initiatives has been to reward pilots who actively participate in being more proficient with savings on their insurance premium through the Avemco Safety Rewards program. Pilots save by earning new ratings, getting recurrent training, participating in the Fast Team Wing program, and listening to podcasts like ours and other Avemco-related courses and training. Call 888-879-0300.
800-288-0389 for a free quote or visit avemco.com/flight safety. Don't forget to tell them the Flight Safety Detective sent you for an automatic 5% off.